From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Wednesday, March 22nd, 2017. And on this day, the legislature looks at ways to get more state aid to local governments and relieve property tax burdens. And we'll hear from the Maine woman who was removed from a plane in Washington, D.C. and left in the terminal with her seeing eye dog. That's ahead in a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Master of Public Health Program, preparing students for today's complex population health and health services needs.
First tonight, local property taxes are too high and the state should do more to relieve that burden. Anyway, that was the message from some who testified today before the legislature's Taxation Committee. The committee is considering several proposals that are aimed at providing more state aid to local governments. Mal Leary has more.
Cities and towns receive most of their revenue to operate from property taxes. And until a few years ago, the state helped ease that burden by sending 5% of all sales and income tax revenues back to the towns. But that share has been reduced to about 2%. And local property taxpayers like Jim Betts of Winthrop say that's been a particular burden on Mainers with fixed incomes, such as retirees.
Property taxes are skyrocketing. The state has failed to recognize the responsibilities to school funding and revenue sharing, causing a large part of the problem.
Voters set a target of 55% of the cost of local schools to come from the state. That target has never been met. And other taxpayers lament the fact that they're seeing increased property tax bills, even as some services are being cut. Waterville City Councilor Winifred Tate.
Because of the state's decision to cut municipal revenue sharing by 60% for years in a row, we now face chronic budgetary shortfalls. Our property tax collection has increased dramatically in recent years. We're still struggling to simply maintain the services our city and region depend on.
And Michael Crooker, the assistant city manager in Bangor, says it's not just the reduction in revenue sharing that is causing financial strife. It's the state and federal government mandates and regulations.
Cities and towns, including Bangor, have been under an immense amount of pressure in the last few years due to cost shifts and unfunded mandates from the state and federal levels of government. Municipalities are responsible for more services and face more regulatory obligations than ever before.
One of the bills under consideration would phase in the restoration of revenue sharing to 5%. And another measure before the panel, endorsed by the conservative Maine Heritage Policy Center, would provide direct relief to taxpayers instead of sending it to cities and towns. But it will cost millions of dollars to restore revenue sharing to the 5% level. Republican Representative Jeff Timberlake of Turner, who serves on the Appropriations Committee, cautioned members of the tax panel any of the bills will need to be paid for.
I'm here to ask you all one question for you to answer before you pass any of these bills. The question is, how are you going to fund them? You are talking about raising an additional $100 million.
Timberlake says that kind of money simply isn't available. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
Even in our politically polarized era, there is one issue on which most state policymakers agree. Maine's roads and bridges are in desperate need of repair. The only debate is how to pay for it, especially as gas tax revenues are declining. This year, Governor Paul LePage and lawmakers in both parties are hoping some new creative proposals will gain traction. Steve Missler has our story.
There are lots of statistics you could cite to highlight the degree of the problem at hand. Democratic Representative Andrew McLean, House Chairman of the Legislature's Transportation Committee, likes this one.
Every single year, we underfund our transportation system by about $160 million.
That's $160 million in what McLean and state transportation officials describe as deferred maintenance. That means the construction and repair projects have been identified by the state, but to date, not been funded.
Those are all projects that have to get done, that should be getting done in a timely fashion, that is currently not getting done.
That $160 million only includes projects the state says it has to do. It's wish list, deferred. Now the rolling list of delayed projects are getting some attention, some of it not so good. Last year, the American Society of Civil Engineers gave the state's infrastructure an overall grade of C-, nothing to brag about. Neither was the D grade for Maine's 23,000 miles of roads, about 37% of which are the responsibility of the state. And according to the Maine Department of Transportation, one out of seven bridges are structurally deficient. That means they're falling apart. Nearly one in five is 80 years old.
We've got to find a way to, another way to source our highway fund.
Naples Republican Rich Sebra is also on the Transportation Committee. He says declining gas tax revenues and fuel-efficient cars are a culprit.
And that directly impacts the highway fund, because that's where most of the highway fund money comes from.
The highway fund, which pays for construction and repair of roads and bridges, is primarily supplied by Maine's tax on gasoline or diesel fuel. But the emergence of more efficient cars, hybrid vehicles, and electric cars has depleted revenues. Also, 6 years ago, the Republican-controlled legislature froze indexing on the gas tax. That's the mechanism that increases the tax rate based on inflation. So to pay for improvements, the state has asked Maine voters to borrow money, $85 million 2 years ago, $100 million last year. Arundel Republican Wayne Perry says all of the transportation bonds will eventually cost Maine taxpayers over $300 million in interest payments.
That doesn't go into a road, that doesn't go into education, that doesn't go into any other program. That goes away to the bondholders.
Perry has a proposal that he hopes will halt the bond debt, at least in the short term. He's sponsoring a bill that would direct sales tax revenues from cars and trucks into the highway fund. Perry says it only makes sense.
I would imagine that most people think that the sales tax on their car goes to roads, and they'd be wrong.
And Perry says the estimated $120 million in revenue would go a long way toward taking care of the deferred maintenance tab. Gorham Democrat Andrew McLean is a co-sponsor of Perry's bill, although he worries it will be a tough sell for legislative budget writers. That's because if they approve it, they'll have to plug a $120 million hole in the general fund budget. And with budget writers already juggling an assortment of competing needs, that won't be easy. Governor LePage's plan to increase transportation funding is also likely to face obstacles. He wants to transfer most of the costs for the Maine State Police from the highway fund to the general fund. That budgeting trick could generate $20 million in transportation funding a year. The Transportation Committee supports it. The Budget Committee, that's iffy, McLean says.
We've got to be pragmatic about a solution.
McLean doubts that budget writers will approve a big handout from the general fund. He suggests a third approach, one that diverts some auto sales tax revenue to the highway fund, but also boosts the gas tax and possibly some other vehicle-related fees.
It's going to be a hybrid solution, and both Democrats and Republicans are going to have to compromise on this.
So far, lawmakers have been unable or unwilling to do that. Meanwhile, the state's road maintenance to-do list isn't getting any shorter, and any new projects are being pushed further into the future. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
Several investigations are underway into what prompted American Airlines to remove a blind Maine woman from a plane in Washington, D.C. and leave her in the terminal with her seeing eye dog. 61-year-old Sue Martin says she has yet to receive any explanation from American Airlines, but some guide dog advocacy groups suspect the airline may have wrongly concluded that her service dog was a pet. A.J. Higgins has more.
This is Quan. Quan, sit. Good boy.
Near the living room fireplace of her Franklin home, Sue Martin introduces her guide dog that was trained at the Seeing Eye Incorporated in Morristown, New Jersey.
Juan is a three-year-old male German Shepherd. I'm so pleased with this match. I really am. He's a good boy, yeah. He's a good boy.
Martin says that while Quan provides a lot of love and companionship, he's really on the job around the clock to service her eyes in and out of the house. On March 1st, Martin and her husband flew from Bangor with Quan on the first leg of their trip, landing at Reagan National Airport in Washington, D.C. But Martin says as they attempted to board for the second leg, They had trouble finding a seating area large enough that would allow Kwan to lay down. She wound up falling, hurting her hip. Martin says when she asked the flight attendant to be assigned to a different seat, the attendant refused. Martin then asked if she could purchase a first-class ticket where there would be more floor room, but was again denied. The attendant, Martin says, explained that dogs could not fly in first class. Then a passenger in first class offered Martin his seat, and she accepted, much to the chagrin of an American Airlines supervisor who, Martin says, directed her off the plane. Once off the plane, Martin says she asked him why she, her husband, and Kwan had been removed.
He said, "The crew has decided that your presence on the plane is not safe and you have to leave." And I just stared at him. And he said, "American Airlines knows all about emotional support animals." At which point I interrupted him and said, "Why are we talking about emotional support animals?"
The couple took an $80 cab ride to a different airport and returned home on a United Airlines flight. Martin says she has yet to receive any explanation from American Airlines about the incident. The company issued a written statement to Maine Public Radio saying that it had apologized to Ms. Martin for her American Airlines experience and that it was investigating her allegations. The airline also said that service animals are welcomed on all flights, but some advocacy groups for the visually impaired and the service animal industry say the type of harassment alleged by Martin is becoming increasingly common as airlines cope with passengers who are trying to pass their pets off as service or emotional support animals. Janine Stanley of the New York-based Guide Dog Foundation for the Blind says Martin's case raises a lot of questions.
They considered her dog to be an emotional support dog when it wasn't. They did not honor her request to change her seating as the rule allows. There were just a series of mistakes that happened here. And I think, you know, maybe it's a culture within American Airlines. I don't know. I hope not.
And Robert Mann of R.W. Mann and Company in Port Washington, New York, which provides technical analysis on the airline industry, says that based on Martin's version of events, there must have been some confusion among the crew if they didn't recognize Kwan as a legitimate service dog.
We even have the situation of a fellow passenger in a higher class of service with perhaps more room beneath the seat offering to accommodate a support animal, seeing-eyed dog in this case, which shows a lot of grace, in my opinion, and it certainly should have been considered by the crew.
Martin's complaint against American Airlines has been accepted by the U.S. Department of Transportation, and its investigation is just getting underway. In the meantime, Martin says she'd like the airline to reimburse her for the $80 cab fare. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine, Wednesday, March 22nd, 2017. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team. I'm Nora Flaherty.